You could have heard this episode 48 hours early on our Patreon, patreon.com/indieheadspodcast. By joining us for as low as $1 a month, you'll receive episodes early, gain access to our Discord server, and get yourself an Indie Heads podcast sticker. All our upcoming episodes will be on our Patreon 48 hours before it hits our public podcast feeds. But if you're hearing this through our Patreon feed, we thank you so much for your support. We especially want to thank our Real Ones patrons, including Beck Etienne, Jordan Mikowski, James Boss, Marcy Anime, Chance Holdup, Delaney Moffman, Josiah Duncan, Jenna, Matt Cameron, Grant in the Back of My Dragula, Tim's Discount Prices, Parker Gross, Andrew Grieve, Listen Up Nerds, Matthew Taylor, Breen Hare, I Like Books, Sarah Moore, Griff, Max Kapczynski, Mark Berry, Cal 50, Dr. Pepper Official Licensed Penis Smashing Machine, Chris Wade, Midwest Maxwell, Jake Wald, Grant, Keep Autism Weird, Rob Marino, Max, Dylan, Zach, Gavin Variety Freak, and Maze Farms. To become a Real One, consider supporting us for $5 a month on Patreon. Receive a bonus episode every month and get a shout out at the top of the pod. Anyways, though, enjoy the episode. Hey everybody, and welcome back to the Indie Heads podcast. And here we are. We're going to finish off our album of the year list for 2023. I am joined by Jackie and Rose, and we're here to go over the Indie Heads podcast top five albums of 2023. But a quick recap of the top 10 so far, in case you're skipping to this episode for some reason, or you have a bad memory, you need a quick refresher. Number 10 on our list was Smokey Robinson with Chasms. Number 9, Chris Farron, Doomsinger. Number 8, Strange Ranger, Pure Music. Jim Legacy, HNPM. Number 6, Tim Hecker, No Highs. But now we're on to the top 5. And number 5 on our list is Home Is Where, The Wailer. Rose, tell us about The Wailer.
Sorry. I was listening to that list that you just dropped, and like, what is a chasm again?
A chasm is any good feeling you have.
Okay. So can like, I'm trying to think.
Christmas can be a chasm.
Here, that's the kind of thing. But it's an easy example. That's all
Rose,
I needed to know.
I have a perfect transition to our first actual topic of discussion. Okay. Smokey Robinson posited that any good feeling you might have could be a gasm. Home Is Where posited that any bad feeling you have could be 9/11. And that's why the two albums are different.
Yes.
In this essay, I will...
I will explain how 9/11 is the opposite of a gasm.
And that's why the Indie Heads podcast is a land of contrast in this essay.
We must explore both sides of the aisle, really.
Is this about anti-gasms? Yeah. although the song Yes, Yes, A Thousand Times Yes could be a track on gasms.
See, no, unfortunately, like... having pored over the lyrics enough times, I'm like, oh wait, this song is actually very miserable.
Well, that's the thing with this record. It's not as dreary as I was expecting going into this record, having taken so long to finally check it out and seeing that and knowing the whole time that there's a song called Every Day Feels Like 9/11, immediately followed by 9/12.
Yeah, well, yeah, no, that's the thing. It's just, you know, everybody immediately after 9/11, what came next? 9/12. I guess we're living another day. And that's kind of, to me, like, one of the main thematic concerns about this record that I find so interesting is just the banality of just American horror, of like the way it feels to just live in a fucking grotesquerie all the time and just be like, wow, this is awful. Sure, can't wait to live another day.
Yeah, it's like the Chat Pile record if they occasionally did like melodies, basically. But like the melodies are like almost sarcastic because it's like the Chat Pile record, you know?
I mean, but I find it so deeply conflicted of an album that's just like constantly just trying to find some like beauty out of the just absolute horror that exists, you know. Like Brandon, her specialty has always been, you know, being a very florid sort of writer and finding ways to make anything just from the grossest to, you know, the pure expression sort of seem like the same kind of extreme energies to it in presenting either, you know, like, mm-hmm. like fucking, of course, like the earliest, the biggest precedent before this record was the little split EP they did with, no,
was it Greed Death?
Was that?
It was Record Setter, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Record Setter. I was about to say See You.
I'm thinking of somebody else.
I was about to say See You Space Cowboy, but then I was like, wait, no. What's her face? Connie from See You Space Cowboy did the art. That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, like this record reminds me a lot of the lyricism that Brandon's been doing lately. Kind of reminds me a lot of that, but minus the extreme directness of like what she was writing on that particular split. It's just mm-hmm. a very interesting perspective on just, you know, America and specifically Southern American culture is this kind of just melting pot of weird sadness and gross shit, you know, like talking about how, like on the very, like to compare this to another one we're going to talk about in a little bit, but like both of these records make very explicit mentions about just like the outcropping of roadside memorials that exist out here because people just get run down by fucking drunk drivers on these big empty roads. It's very dire.
Mm-hmm.
Just hearing it on two records this year and going, yeah, dude, it really is like that, huh? not a great feeling, but at the same time, I'm like, wow, I really get to relate to this art this year, especially since I'm leaving now.
Yeah, it's been a big year for albums about the South, but they have not been positive. It's been a big last 2 years with like the Epocane record thrown in there too. Like,
yeah no, it's
not
just
a lot of fun times being had.
It's just, yeah, it's just a very fascinating one. I think this especially like the big level up on this one is mostly just their textural work and like being able to write a song really well. Because I think, you know, everybody kind of ragged on them, like, yeah, why is this release only like 13 minutes? This isn't an album, like as if they'd never heard a fucking grindcore band in their lives or something like that, you know. Just like, I'm just like, what are all you people on about? And finally they're just like, okay, we're spreading our legs with this one. Are you happy? We're like going out in different directions and seeing what happens.
Spreading our legs by having just like a relatively normal album length and song
length. I was gonna say it's 35 minutes, which is like an opus by like Joyce Manor standards, but by like a lot of other band standards, it's pretty medium. But I think it's like a good middle ground. Like,
yeah,
they definitely
expanded
it out.
I think it especially helps knowing because like they are going, like knowing that they are going to probably be one of the more output heavy bands. I'm like, you know, I kind of don't care if you guys put together like 30 minutes or 10 minutes. Like, the fact that you're putting out an album or an EP or a split, you know, every year is still like, that's enough to keep me excited. I don't need like a lot of material from a band. Frankly, I am still of the mindset that we should be trimming down to sub 40 minutes as the average for albums. Like the CD era has bloated us beyond belief. We couldn't go back after the CD era because we were just like, guys, we got all this extra space now.
I love a good long record, but I think it should be something you have to apply for, like a commercial driver's license. Like, like not everyone can get on that highway right away. You gotta earn it.
No. Yeah, exactly. And I think, like, still, you know, Home Is Where very much have had the juice for a while, but still seeing them very explicitly, you know, try to make a level up album in the form of, like, we're working with Jack Shirley, because... Oh my god, dude! Anybody who brings Grammy Jack into the mix, I'm gonna get excited, you know. No matter if it's like the Deaf Heaven Boys or like fucking Nouvellesco, you know. If
or
we
Shut
wanna
Ups.
Go, like...
Shout out to Shut Ups.
Chris Farron. Chris Farron. Yeah, Jack Shirley mastered the new Chris Farron record.
Yeah, exactly.
We
it's just like, anybody who gets Grammy Jack in there is probably making
if
some
you make
choices.
Loud guitar music. He's like the first choice. It's like how like every movie would like to have Roger Deakins or whatever. It's like, yeah,
Deakins or Hans Zimmer doing the score. It's like, you got it. You know,
he's
you
like
get him,
the
get
name.
I mean, you know what I
band.
Say like about the cinematography in Blade Runner 2049 as well as the band Animal Collective's roster.
Do you say Deakin?
I'm a freak for Deke.
Yes, I saw exactly where that was going.
Yeah,
I
just very important to get that out there, to get my opinions on the record.
I would also
it
like
is
to
very
say, oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to mention, it's funny we mentioned Animal Collective, because of course the last episode, Jackie made the complaint about no Lana on our list this year, and then AJ's the same, but for Animal Collective, like, no Animal Collective?
I should have listened to this earlier. JL has told me to listen to this album several times, and also Home Is Where are friends and supporters of Echo Astral, so we have to stan legally, however. Yeah. I do like this record, but like in the last year or so, I have achieved, and I almost brought this up last week, but like I have come to a beautiful place in my journey as a music listener and enjoyer that like some things are none of my business, truly. And that's not, it's not condescending. It's condescending toward myself. Like, it's like, it's not that like I dislike it so much that I don't even want to give it a try. It's like, even if I was like giving it my honest go, there's just certain areas of the sphere that are not really my bag. But I like this more than I expected to. Like, I gave it a listen and it was very solid. Like, I really like, I think it's a little like front load. I like yes, a thousand times yes, and Skin Meadow were more my bag than the rest of it. But like, it's good.
And this is where we differ, because I like most of my highlights are in the back end. Like, I really love. I think the 1-2 of Daytona 500, Chris Farley, is kind of just the peak of them as a band for me. I'm just like, this is the best stuff they've ever done. It's like the more like explicitly yeehaw kind of music. Yeah. Where I'm just like, hell yeah, dude. Like that, and like also Chris Farley just has like one of my favorite pieces of guitar work in the entire album, with that like specifically that section where they kind of start drawing out and bringing in the singing saw, and the guitar is just going, like, it's just getting this incredible loop to it. Just, I find Brandon's lyrics on this stretch of the album to be probably my favorite stuff. Just like, it's the most like gacked out kind of imagery in a way that I really love, especially with Chris Farley.
Mm-hmm.
It's simultaneously, you know, obfuscating and also very to the point. You know, the final message is just no one unloved. Like, that's so deeply earnest of a statement in a world where I feel like, you know, like I feel like this record is very specifically commenting on the way that people tend to obfuscate a lot of their feelings from each other in a weird way, like especially on Yes, a Thousand Times Yes, which is, you know, about a couple who just like is getting married, but at the same time, you can tell there's just this weird rift between them that doesn't exist, and unsaid things. It's just interesting to hear a record get to the point of just, you know, with say your shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Again, I would agree. Good release. I don't know if I love it as much as I Became Birds, but I think it's just because I Became Birds was just such a like a breath of fresh air when it came out, and I feel like the landscape is just even just 2 years later, the landscape for this kind of music is already changed, where it already feels like the fifth wave emo scene is already like reaching this sort of weird transitional period. But I think that's just on me. It just came out during a busy time of the year, so I just didn't spend as much time with it as I probably should have. But it's a good release. Again, I liked, as you can see, I have like most of the songs downloaded because I like them. They got on my playlist. Yeah, yeah, Skid Meadow's great. Lily Pad Poopool's great. Floral Organs, great outro. It's a good record. Yeah, I like it.
Real good album. I'm always excited to see what they do next. I hope they continue with like the Animal Collective level outputs.
Yeah, I'm hoping that they're pretty quick to follow this one up.
The thing is, like, they probably will be, and that's why I'm just so happy. It's just because they've been continually going at this pace. And also, I should say the caveat of, like, this is one of only, like, two records this year where, like, you look at my last FM stats and it fully consumed me for, like, a solid 3 months. And then just the rest of this year, I've just been kind of listening to whatever. It's, like, two specific records, and the next one that I talk on will be the other one that I talk about.
I think that's a perfect segue to our next record.
Speaking of which, I will not be talking for now. Have fun.
Yes, this is a record that came out. We like to make sure Rose
doesn't say her joke.
I was talking to the kids on the schoolyard the other day. You're never going to believe what I heard. They kept saying, Yola Stinko. Yola Stinko. I don't know what that means. I don't know what it means, but it don't sound too happy.
I do not think they Yola Stinko.
I think the children are saying Yola Stinko out there. I don't know what it means. It just sounds like they're very unhappy.
Our number four.
Hillary Clinton say go La Tango to the polls. I heard, oh my God.
Jesus Christ. Our number four album of the year. Number four on our album of the year list is Yola Tango, This Stupid World. This is one that we may or may not have a transmission play at some point. I'm hoping to get someone in the Yola Tango hive. But Jackie, you have at least some thoughts on this record.
I like this record quite a bit. Like Rose was saying with Home Is Where, I had a period of time this year where I was listening to it, and then I basically fell off of listening to it besides the one or two best songs on it, which kind of stuck with me to the end of the year and made it pretty high on my song of the year list. But even though it like slid down my list due to better stuff coming out, when I went back to it at the end of the year, I was like, this is still a really good record, and especially when you appreciate how incredibly consistent Yola Tango have been over time. I have not always been the biggest Yola Tango head, but I've slowly, like, bit by bit over the last couple of years, I've never had a period where I was like, okay, now I need to listen to every Yola Tango record, I'm getting into them. But, like, every year I, like, get into another one of them, and I think they just have this, like, understated quality that is both, like, why people like them, but also makes it easy to just sort of discount them or think there's Yola Tango, etc. But this stupid world, more like this good album is what you should say, because it's a great I think it's about as good as late period album. It feels very much like they're a moon-shaped pool, if you will. Like, it's this kind of late period, kind of stately, but also kind of like back to the basics of what just makes their band really good record. That also has this kind of mournful, everything's fucked, but we're still here, I guess, quality to it. That is, I find especially, I think Fallout is a very good song, but especially Acelestine, or however you say that song title, is like one of the best songs of the year. That song is so good. And scratches like a low Mazzy Star sort of itch for me. That's just like the best kind of song that can exist. So any record that has that song on it, very good. But similar to the Home Is Where situation, like even though it's a very short, concise record, it's like the first half of this record is just so much like where it's at for me. Like the 7-minute opener into Fallout, tonight's episode, and Acelestine is just like a great fucking run, and then the rest of the record is like pretty solid, gets a little whatever, but you know, also great album cover. I forgot to include it in my big thread of album covers that I like this year, but the This Stupid World album cover with like all of the like grain scratch like dust print stuff on it, and also the not only the font of the Yola Tango, but then if you look in the grass, it says This Stupid World in like almost unreadable text, but it's also kind of readable, and this cool picture of the truck. It's just great. I really like everything about it. Good album, good album cover. I think Maddie, if you can get him, I think Gavin should be the one to have to do a transmission for this, because, and I want
he owes me.
And
he owes us.
Listen, I want to let the listeners in on a little secret. Gavin likes music. He sincerely likes it. And he used to listen to this band in particular, and like Pavement and like other indie rock all the fucking time. And he won't tell you it, but he's one of the people that voted for this record. Because he likes those funky Yola Tango white boys when they cook up a new album. And so don't tell him I told you this, but Gavin, this band is cool.
The funny thing, Jackie, is that we're gonna interrogate this like in like 2 or 3 weeks when we do our Garage Rock Would You Revive Me episode.
Oh my god.
That Gavin
yes.
put together the playlist. So we'll be interrogating his past as an indie rocker to an extent.
Yes.
But again, he does probably owe me one, so I will beg him to give us a transmission, which if he has it, I'm gonna play it right now. And if he doesn't have it, listeners at 490 Freak on Twitter, just harass him on Twitter in our Discord. that he didn't do the transmission like
how
he should.
How about this? If he doesn't do the transmission, if you heard this episode and he hadn't done the transmission, then by transitive property and preceding law precedents, he should have to do the weekend dance.
He should, yes.
If Gavin does not submit a transmission
We're bringing it back.
If Gavin does not submit a transmission by the deadline, he has to do the weekend dance. That's his punishment.
Yes. I'm gonna make sure. Let me go ahead and call him out in the Discord real quick. And just to make sure that we're putting him on blast right now.
Yes.
So
do it.
But while I write this, let's go to our number three. Our number three on our list for album of the year, Wednesday, Rat Saw God. Of course, Rose and I did an FYC episode on this earlier in the year, but I assume Rose still has plenty to say about this record if she wants to go off. So Rose, you can wake up from the devil's nap too, and you can talk about Wednesday and Rat Saw God.
The devil, oh man, that's a scary guy. Like he did some fucked up stuff. You ever read the Bible before?
I heard he did some crazy stuff in Georgia one time. I heard a song.
No,
about
we
it.
Don't talk about that. That's not canonical. Okay, like that text from Charlie Daniels.
We're not
Daniels
talking about Georgia today. We're talking about North Carolina.
God, rent going up. Okay, yeah, it's just Jesus, I'm sorry. I like you have brought me here at a time when I could not deign to be serious for a single moment about this album, partially because just like I've talked about it so goddamn much now.
I can also share my thoughts then.
And also I'm watching Maddie type up a threat to Gavin, which makes me feel very complicit here. Like
it is funny.
I feel like I'm witnessing a crime about to happen.
Well, this is not a crime. This is a fair deal. All right.
This feels like a hostage situation. I'm gonna be honest.
Gavin has put us into so many different. He's put AJ in a hostage seat. I've been in the hostage seat.
You willingly accept this
seat.
Role, though. You willingly accept this punishment for yourself, and I guess. I know this because I'm the one who never shows up on here anymore, and I don't have to do anything.
Yeah, again, you checked out at a good time. But our number three album of the year, of course, is Wednesday, Rat Saw God, and we should probably talk about Rat Saw God.
We should talk about it. Hey,
let me tell you. Like at this point, like talking about this record on a year end list in 2023 is the equivalent of doing your taxes. You know, you got to do it.
It's like it's got to be.
It's got to be done because like par excellence, you know, and I don't say that in a way to like diminish its achievement. I think it is great, you know, so assuredly great and so assuredly of itself that's. Well, everybody had to talk about it for a reason, you know. It's on all the lists for a reason.
But like, it's having its end of year. Like, people did the whole thing all December when it made all the lists of doing the bad. Are we sure this is good? You're not on Twitter anymore, Rose. But like, I'll have you know that it's obvious to and boring to us, but it's also we have to put it on the list because some people still don't get it that this band is good, and I think a lot of people that don't get this band. Assume that this is just all like a hype blowing up smoke situation. So I will join the chorus of people that says no, Wednesday are as good as everyone is saying they are.
That's the thing is I just don't feel it. Like I'm so utterly tapped out on the concept of discourse as a whole. Like let me tell you, I love this band with my whole heart. I'm going to go see them in like what day is it? 2 weeks, exactly exactly 2 weeks, but just about 2 weeks from now, I am going to go see them play a show with Hotline TNT, and that will be my final gig in North Carolina. And I couldn't Yeah, I couldn't choose a better way to go because I love them dearly. Let me tell you what's good about these folks. Let me tell you what's good. Shoegaze. Beginning of this year, I'm gonna be honest. I was not still in my phase of positing myself as a hater on the genre, but I was in a place where I was ready to accept it in my heart. And I think
They're definitely part of what got me there, because they are one of many bands in a moment here. You know, people talk a lot about new gaze as like this big, like, oh, guys, what are the kids into these days? And the answer is loud guitars, apparently. But, you know, part of that is just, I think we found a moment where finally American shoegaze has gotten off its butt and stopped trying to do revivalism for sounds that we've, you know, well and truly drained the well on. And instead gone on for much more interesting sorts of genre fusion and dissection and doing just like actually unique things with a sound that frankly desperately needed it. And this, of course, like, this and all the other associated acts are very much of a piece with one another in being like a real upender. Like, of course, people have talked about country gazes, like, what the fuck is this? Like, what is this permutation of this genre, which is so thoroughly in defiance of its whole deal, you know? And I think they make the most of it. It's just, it's a good record. It's got all the spirit of country. It's got all the spirit of shoegaze. I can tell you, because I listened to like 100 records of each genre this year as like a prep for myself for this. Like, that's how much this year was centered around me preparing myself to enjoy this thing and then enjoying it. Was just, I had several months where I just only listened to country and shoegaze because of this album. I methodically sent myself down multiple rabbit holes just to understand why this thing was good. And now I can tell you, it's good. Because it is all the things you expect. It is a well-crafted record. It is handcrafted, like a good meal.
Yeah, I think the thing that I think a lot of people, because they sort of blew up as like this shoegaze band that was doing alt country stuff, people, I think, like, misunderstood what was like important about them. I think it's not that they're like reinventing shoegaze, because I don't really even think of them primarily as a shoegaze band. I think that they're making indie rock and alt country less boring by bringing in the things that are cool happening in shoegaze right now. Because as we've discussed previously, but I don't know if we mentioned on the podcast, Carly Hartzman knows ball. If you find a shoegaze band that's cool and like 15 people follow them on Instagram, Carly Hartzman's already going to be following them on Instagram. Carly Hartzman just posted Jim Legacy on her Instagram story. She's a certified ball knower.
Of course.
But like, also, but then like, that's what we're saying. Like, the people, the mass of people for whom are boys that hear NJ Lenderman and be like, oh, he just me like me for real. Those people who have boring sort of middle of the road indie rock taste deserve better, and this band provides that to them.
I think a lot about that like interview anecdote that Carly had, where she's just like, yeah, there's like this pool of guys who like gather around MJ after the show. Yeah, I get it. Like that's the dudes contingent. The dudes rock contingent.
One of them is our former coworker Chris. Like, there are many a boy out there that just, like, if they could take a pill and become an MJ Lenderman tomorrow, they would do it.
I mean, understandable. Mm-hmm. Like, you want to live the dream North Carolina life. Many people want to live the North Carolina dream.
Some people have gender dysphoria, but a lot of boys have MJ Lenderman dysphoria. They're
God, why can't I be him?
Why can't I be the guy who everyone loves for pointing out that Jackass is funny? It's just unfair, you know? I've been saying this for years!
Is that he does these things that seem so, like, oh damn, it's so true. But, like, that is the magic of being a great songwriter, is that you can present ideas to people that are universal enough that everyone's going to get it, but that you present them in a way that's like, you never thought about it like this before. Like, maybe you thought that Jackass
made
is
you
funny,
think.
But perhaps you didn't consider that Jackass is funny like the Earth is round. I don't think you thought about that before, did you?
And that's like part the endearing quality to like both MJ's songwriting as well as Carly's. Like, I think there's, you know, a vivid honesty in their ability to like portray their own voices. And it's just, it's nice to hear a piece of art that actually wants to take set and setting, you know, into like a real perspective. Like it wants to tell you where it's from and what it's about, rather than just being like, hey guys, we got some songs, we're straight out of Brooklyn, we've been somebody's been paying for this for a few years, it's really cool, we're really excited to show you this one, guys, it's gonna be so cool. How's it going tonight, Cleveland? Woo!
Oh god.
It's just the reason this album works is because it comes from a very distinct set of tastes and aesthetics, and you can tell this is somebody who has ideas and enjoys very specific things and wants to show you that. And that is why, to me, it is, you know, we should be giving it 300 Game of the Year awards like The Last of Us did. It's really important.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I haven't really got a word in yet on this record, which is very rude, very sexist to not let the boy on this podcast get awarded about this record that very much is a record about being a girl failure. I love this record. It is, if you saw my low effort review, I'll just say the same thoughts. This is a record that, like, the critics are right. Like, you're talking to me. I'm someone that usually goes against the grain of a lot of critics. This is a case where it's like, no, they're right about this one. Like Carly is, again, one of our best songwriters going today, because she's very similar in terms of just, if you just write on paper, like her songwriting style, it is very similar to a lot of her contemporaries in the more like singer songwriter space. Like, and you're talking like your boy geniuses and et cetera, like very like stream of consciousness, very like honest songwriting, where it's sort of painting a picture of a setting, and you know, not trying to wrap everything up into metaphors, etc. It's very like brutally honest songwriting, but it's not boring. She knows how to not make the details of what's going on boring compared to like other artists, where I feel like they use the like stream of consciousness over explain everything to the point where it's like, okay, this is boring. I think you could have just used a metaphor and you would be fine. It's not boring here, partially because, well, I think Carly has lived a very interesting life and knows how to write about it properly. And knows to kind of knows where to insert the peaks and valleys. You obviously have a peak with the case of Chosen to Deserve, which is a great song. This beautiful, beautiful love song about accepting your partner, flaws and all. I watched like a TikTok recently about someone talking about their partner, and it was kind of rang very true to this song, being like, they know that I'm fucked up. They know that I've like done these things and been through these things, and yet they still love me and they still care for me. And that is really rare and hard to find. And that song is really beautiful in that way. And you sort of have a song kind of like What's So Funny that is very much like the darkest song on the record. And is sort of like, hey, I can kind of laugh about some of the details of like what has happened in my life, but there's times where it's like, I can't really laugh about this. Like what happened to me was fucked up and sad, and I can't, you know, there's not much to laugh about. But you know, it's a record. This is a record that is very much like, as someone in my mid 20s currently, that, you know, entered a debauchery period in you know, towards the end of my early to mid 20s. There's stuff in this record that, again, I really relate to, really love it. And again, I'm excited to hear more from Carly and the band. Again, because it's just amazing that this band has blown up the way they have, because like that doesn't happen. Like a band this good shouldn't be this big, but yet they are, and it's great. It's awesome. I, again, great record.
Heartily endorse, and yeah.
I was also gonna say, yeah, going, I think that as you're saying about like the songwriting and it being like very vivid and specific in the details, but also it being very interesting, I think that there's a lot of ties between this record and the next one, or less, without doing the segue fully, where like, yes, I think both of them, it's easy to reduce them down to like, in the same way with the MJ Lenderman record, it's very easy to reduce that record to the Jackass is funny line and the kind of meme like version of the record. And I think that it's understandable why we do that, and I'm totally guilty of it too, but like, I think that with both this record and the next one, they're both really good at telling these things that are, like you were saying, actually with the Home Is Where record also, things that are funny and sad, and like these ideas that are, these feelings are mingling, and they don't necessarily it's never like one thing or another. Like there aren't really like joke lines on the Wednesday record, but there are lots of little like funny details that like a lot of them are really just like funny to think about. But there's even those funny details to think about, like the sex shop at the side of the road, or like all the different little like you talk about the memorials at the side of the road. There is that melancholy to all of it too, and the way that those two things mingled together on this record is like really, really, really cool. And also like the next record we'll talk about, which we can just get into it now, like
yes,
both records show don't tell. That is the thing I think that more differentiates them from a lot of the stream of consciousness confessional singer-songwriters. Not so much Phoebe Bridgers, but like the people trying to be Phoebe Bridgers, is that yeah. So many of them, like in an attempt to reduce the amount of artifice in songwriting, just like tell you the emotion of the song in a way that's like not, that's like telling not showing. And
yeah,
the thing about both records is that they know how to communicate an idea about a place or a person or a character through details rather than through like either through ham-fisted metaphor or through like over-explained, like dumbed down, like TikTok lyrics, right? Like they strike the balance where the details are like physical and specific and visceral, but also strike like emotional chords and associations and stir up memories. I mean, that's the great line on What's So Funny, memory always twists the knife, nothing will ever be as vivid as the darkest time of my life. Just like real fucking shit,
mm-hmm. You know?
And this is a great record. I think haters be damned, Wednesday are doing the thing. MJ Lenderman's about to get even bigger. It's happening.
Yeah, North Carolina popping off. I mean, I'm moving to North Carolina very soon, so you know. Hey.
Mugatu voice so hot right now, North Carolina.
Yeah, yeah. See, this is why I'm moving, is because like I gotta beat the wave of all the people are gonna be like, oh yeah, it's so cool here in the Carolinas, buddy. I was here first, and I left first.
But nevertheless, we hinted at it. Number two, let's get to number two on our list. Rose, if you say don't say anything mean, you mute your mic. I because I know you want to say mean things about this next record.
But you don't like
hinted
this
at it in the chat. Rose does not like this next record, at least as far as I can tell. And I get it, because I'm going to read off a blurb.
Listen,
that our friend...
we're talking about overexposed small East Coast cities. I'm the last person that wanted to continue to push forward the Philadelphia agenda. This is an anti-Philadelphia Eagles podcast. This is an anti-Philadelphia podcast in general, besides my friends who live there. And this guy that we're about to talk about, he's... Also, DJ Sega, the Philadelphia club producer. He's cool. The rest of you and my friends, fuck off. But
fuck.
that was basically the hook to my Greg Mendez Artist of the Year essay. Is I'm like, look, I get it. People are mentioning Alex G and Elliot Smith and Philadelphia. I understand if like your shoulders tense up and you get nervous when I start talking about this. It's okay. I promise. This guy's got the juice. This man, Greg Mendez, has the juice. He's got the sauce. He is a real fucking deal songwriter. And this record that he made is fantastic.
Yes.
And I love it so much. I find it has stuck with me past the first period of time where I was really into it. And it's just a record that, like, it's so... perfectly short, like it's 23 minutes, and yet it feels like a complete statement, and it feels so off the cuff yet so like well thought through and considered. And some of these songs just sort of came together, and then some of them he's been sitting on for years and years and years tinkering with. Like the last song on this record is like over a decade old in terms of when he first demoed it. And I think you can tell that this is like the culmination of a guy who, I think we went into this last episode, but basically like he kicked around the scene for like 15 years or whatever, or like over a decade before he even started releasing solo music under his own name. And that only happened in like 2015 or so, which is around the same time that he got clean. And so he writes about that on this record sort of indirectly and directly. And it's a lot an album about like a relationship that's falling apart and coming back together again, and two people that are both dealing with substance abuse problems and the relationship and the lack of communication and all of these different, but it's not really like a concept record. It's just like a lot of little like memories and stories. And like with the Wednesday record, it like really just paint every single detail on this record. These songs are so short. They're not long rambles. This is not Mark Kozelek where it's like, let me dump my entire diary entry and every thought that's ever entered my head. It's like these off, I mean, like the signature line in this record is like, I would probably just tell you about some dumb shit. Like he introduces the song is like, you always want to know more about me. And I'm like, leave me alone. I would probably just tell you some dumb little story. But then this whole record is full of these dumb little stories that are all like so moving and interesting. And every single detail of these characters like paints such a vivid picture of like who they are and who and what their relationship is like. And what it's been like and how it's changing in one way or another. But it's also, like the last record, not ever just one thing in a kind of neat way. Like, it's never, it would be very easy, and it is very easy to talk about this record in a Sufjan Stevens, like, I'm so sad, I'm so fucked up, this confessional folk record, like, tears my heart out and stomps on it. And it does do that. But it's not like in the interview that I cite in the article, like his music is sad, but that's not usually like the dominant emotion of these songs, even though that tends to be the thing that they're most often described to him as. Like a lot of these songs, like Hoping You're Doing Okay is a really like optimistic, sweet, hopeful song. And then like there's moments on this record where like he has lyrics directed towards someone that clearly imply that like they've really hurt him, but he's not delivering them with like this fuck you bravado. Like everything about this record is very like meek and kind-hearted and has these moments that are like kind of funny mixed in with all of the stuff that can be really devastating, and it's all delivered in this way that is very similar to the MJ Lenderman thing of like it just sounds like a friend of yours telling you a story. And that is way harder to do than Greg Mendez makes it look on this self-titled record. And that's why I think it's really, really, really good, in addition to just the fact that it's like a 23-minute record that I don't think has a bad song on it that gets better every single time I listen to it.
Facts. I'd fully agree. I think what makes this record, and I think you're right to say that the Wednesday record and this one are kind of kinship in that way, is that it feels like, and this is a weird thought, if it doesn't make any sense, I apologize. It makes sense in my head. Like Reg and Carly's songwriting is very, for lack of a better term, it's like very episodic in a ways, where it's sort of like, here are little bits and pieces of my life. Whereas some of the other, you know, songwriters that work in that sort of confessional singer-songwriter mode, they try to paint every song like a feature film. And sometimes you don't really need, you know, the whole picture. You just need like a little slice of it. You need a little slice of the picture. You don't sometimes, you know, the details don't, you don't always need all the details. Sometimes the audience can fill in the blanks and kind of put themselves where they need to be put. And that's the crazy, because these, you know, the Greg Mendez record and the Wednesday record, they're both very personal records. Like these are records that, like, for me, like, have I ever been arrested outside of a crack den? I have not. But the way that Greg writes that song and the emotions that he kind of puts you in that journey, you can put yourself into his shoes and figure out, you know, like, yeah, you may not have like woken up at a crack den, but like, hey, you woke up clean and then you ended your night completely fucked up, like without realizing
those are, that's all the devastating moments of the record are like the minor notes. They're like the thing that happens after the thing. Like the devastating line of that record, that exact song, is earlier that day we were both clean and then somebody said come back to me because it's easy. Like the devastating parts of this record are not like, and then you overdosed and it was really sad. It's like the small little quiet moments of like devastation and personal disappointment and being like, earlier that day I was on the right path and then I fucked it up again and now I'm like in my own mess. Like, that's a feeling that anyone can relate to, obviously. And like, it finds a way to not like, turn this into, it's not melodramatic at all. No. And it's also not to bring up Mark Kozlov like a second time, but like, it's not just being like, and then this happened and then that happened, right? It's so specific about the episodes it's choosing, even though it's underplaying them.
It feels very similar to like the earlier Kaz stuff where, before he went full on down the stream of consciousness road. Yeah, it feels very much in like the vein of like a Ghost of the Great Highway.
Like, even then, if you look at like Benji or those earlier records in the Sun Kill Moon stuff, he did not write songs this short. And he also didn't write songs that were like deliberately poppy from start to finish in the way these are. Like, the incredible fucking line in the Daniel Chelsky Stereogum thing where he's like, yeah, I tried to make stuff that sounds like the Beach Boys, and there was only one song that sounded like the Beach Boys, but it sounded like the Beach Boys if the Beach Boys like didn't understand music, so I cut that one. I think that belies like how he's more similar to like Elliott Smith and Alex G, where like, he's telling these weird little songs, but he has a really fucking strong sense of melody and like actual songwriting. Like, I think the last song on this record reminds me a lot of a Randy Newman song, like You've Got a Friend in Me almost. And like, I think that there's like a lot of moments on the record that feel very kind of classic Elliott Smith in the simplicity of it, and also the way he writes these little like acoustic guitar melodies that like fill up the entire like length of a bar. But I think in general, it's just like that like really strong melodic thing combined with like this kind of offbeat songwriting style. But the thing that makes him really different from Alex G especially, but even like Elliott Smith, is that like a lot of those songwriters who write these little kind of songs strike this really weird line about how personal they get, and they tend to be either like telling you everything or being really guarded and not wanting to tell you anything. And this is just very like unfussy and like not trying to create a mystique in either direction. Like, some artists try to create a mystique by being like, let me tell you about my whole life and my trauma and my lore and my backstory and all that stuff. And then other artists are like, don't ask me about these songs. These are characters. Don't try to draw parallels between my real life and the music. And like Alex G sort of like only started writing kind of autobiographically recently, and even then he's pretty cagey about like when that stuff is like lining up with his real life, even though it obviously is. Versus with this record, it just kind of says the thing. It says like the quiet part loud, you know, while also being this understated thing. Like, he'll just come out and say like, did I ever tell you the time about this thing happened, right? Like, all of these different, like, it's just so kind of to the point in a way that makes you think, like, why doesn't every other songwriter just, like, in the way you were saying about the Home Is Bay record, like, just say the fucking thing? And this record is an entire record of someone just, like, saying, okay, like, it took me 10 years, but, like, here's what I've been trying to say to you in this, like, difficult relationship we've had together or whatever. Like, but it's also not like dramatic and like, oh, everything's coming to a big climax. It's just like these little quiet moments that end up painting this really great picture of the moment. I mean, Clearer Picture of You is about that. Like, it's literally about like the moment that you realize with a person, like, oh, for a while I wanted to believe that you were like one kind of thing. And there was like, you know how like sometimes you have a person that you like and they have certain flaws and you like want to overlook those like parts of them and just like appreciate the stuff that you like about them. But then like they do something and you're like, okay, I now have to reconsider what I was thinking here. And like that experience of like, okay, now I see the full picture of you, and now I can understand why I was struggling before, because I was trying to reconcile this part of you that I didn't want to admit existed. And like, that's that's like a really deep thing, and he gets that very, very quickly and in a kind of neat way that makes you be like, fuck, why didn't someone else think of that, or why didn't I think of that if you write songs or whatever. Like, it's just very, very clever without being like clever in a way that's trying to point attention to itself.
100%. Again, I agree on all fronts. And one quick thing I want to mention before we move on to our next topic of discussion. He also just has the voice of an angel. Like, he's also just a great singer. I feel like that's kind of an underrated aspect of Greg Mendez. Like, he's just like a really good singer, but not in a way that's like show off. He's just like, he has a really lowy voice. You could show your mom Greg Mendez, and before she can process what the lyrics are about, you go, that boy has a nice voice. He could do well on The Voice or American Idol. He's got the voice of an angel.
He does. He has a very nice voice. And also, as the Greg Mendez song goes, he has a beautiful voice, and he has the prettiest wife, and he's the nicest guy you've ever met, or whatever the lyrics are. It's honestly, that's like very close to what the lyrics of that song are.
Yes, but let's move on. But we're not going to go to our number one just yet, as we put out a poll in our Indiettes Podcast Discord server, which, hey, if you want to join, patreon.com/Indiettes Podcast. Just $1 gets you in the Discord, gets you episodes 48 hours early, gets you a sticker. Again, great deal. But we asked the Discord what their favorite albums of the year were, and we're going to briefly touch on their top 10 of the year. Tying for number 10, these all have the same amount of points. Superviolet, Infinite Spring, Protomartyr, Formal Growth in the Desert, Chris Farron, Doomsinger, all tied with 19 points. So that's 8 through 10. Chris Farron, again, was number 9 on our list. Superviolet, that was in my top 12. I think that's a really good record. And Protomartyr, Protomarty, more like it. But continuing on, number 7 on the list, Sufjan Stevens with Javelin. I imagine there's some people being like, you're called the Indie Heads Podcast and there's no Sufjan on your list? What the hell? That's what the subreddit's for. Subreddit voted number 1 on their album of the year list. We do our own thing here.
I actually do want to listen to that Sufjan record, but I have been both busy and like not emotionally ready to do that because the post that he put on Instagram made me cry like a little baby. So I will get around to it eventually, Sufjan, I promise.
It's even by his standards, it's a pretty like tough record in that aspect. I definitely need to spend more time with it. But continuing on the list, number 6, Kalela, Raven.
Great record.
Number 5, Greg Mendez. Number 4, Kara Jackson, Why Does the Earth Give Us People to Love? Number 3, Julie Byrne, The Greater Wings. Number 2, which is I'm really happy to see this one so high, Jim Legacy, H&PM with 34 points. And of course, number 1, Wednesday, Rat Saw God. But this list, at least the top 10, it's missing our number 1 album of the year, which is, drum roll please, Billy Woods and Kenny Siegel with Maps is our number 1 favorite album of 2023. Again, we are the critics in us. Look,
people are right about it. And I think it sometimes also helps right. that there's just not a lot of stuff taking its oxygen. Like, the beautiful upside of the last 2 years were like, all of the big ticket rap guys have just sort of flubbed and flopped, and Go Girl gave us nothing. It's just given a lot more oxygen for Billy Woods to just like dominate. And Billy Woods was like, bet, I'm gonna make the most accessible record of my career that also is still like a galaxy brain stepping through dimensions stuff. And it even got me to be like, I've appreciated Billy Woods before, but this is the first time we're coming into an end of year episode where like I actually listened to this record enough times to be able to like speak on it, and it stuck with me in a way other Billy Woods records haven't, where it's just, it has a couple of songs that kind of work outside the context of the record while also being a very easy to listen to experience. It's just great. Good rec. Good.
Yes, and I'll say some words because I know Rose has a whole manifesto ready, I'm assuming. Again, great record. It's in my top 10 this year. It's kind of funny with this record, just sort of talking about the greater like sort of list season critical sphere, where I think this showed up. It's not super high on the aggregate list, which I think is only because it was always on critics list, but it was never like super duper high. It was always like somewhere like either in the top, like in the lower end of the top 10, or like somewhere in like the top 25 area. But this is a record where like, even compared to some of the big like aggregate album of the years, there's no one really where I'm like, we're like Boy Genius. There's some contention about that record. Obviously there's a lot of discourse about it. Sufjan is kind of another one, but like even then, Sufjan is just such an institution, you know, whereas Billy Woods is not quite at that level yet, although for like some hip hop fans, and I think with this record, like this record is a coronation where he's always been a guy. Billy Woods has always been always the bridesmaid, never the bride, and I feel like this record is him like becoming the bride, where critics were just, they were just waiting for the right release where it's like, hey, what, like this guy, he's so good, he's so great, but like to get just, you know, regular everyday or just our regular listeners to listen to this guy, it's tough. He has a discography that is like really kind of tough to decipher and get into sometimes. It is very dense, and they're just waiting for like one that's just not as dense, that people go, hey, this is Billy Woods as most accessible, but yet you still get the gist of like what this guy's deal is and what makes him really special and what makes him stand out from his contemporaries. And this album is that, where it's like you have Kenny Siegel, great production. I mean, Kenny Siegel's been a guy who's put out some great work over the years. Again, he had the great record with Milo, obviously had the record with Billy Woods a couple years ago. And this one just seems like both these guys at their peak powers, like coming together for this great like tour diary record that is this sort of the Great American Road Trip album. It's fantastic. Rose, she has woken up from Devil's Nap number 3. Rose, are you ready to go off? Because I think I've said my piece. It's a great record, but Rose will do it justice.
Yeah, okay, wow. I've come on here now, God knows how many times, and continually been asked, tell us your thoughts about Billy Woods, because like I unfortunately I am somehow the expert here. And we've reached a point where I achieved my long-standing desire of victory with this, whereas just like every year the last few years some Billy Woods related release would get slightly higher and higher in our top 10, and I'd have to come in here and be like, guys, you don't understand, he's the best rapper alive. We gotta say it because it's so unbelievably true at this point. Like a guy who has put out 15 projects in the last decade, they're all like gold standard quality shit. It's just, you know, like it's just running down the list in by itself is a real victory lap. Just Dour Candy, Race Music, Today I Wrote Nothing, Known Unknowns, Rome, Paraffin, Hiding Places, Terror Management, Brass, Haram, Aethiopes, Church, Maps, and We Buy Diabetic Test Strips. It's all Billy Woods' output in like the last decade. That's fucking insane for anyone, let alone for, you know, one guy to do both by himself and in collaboration with others. And that is why I feel the need to break down what I think are, you know, the core fundamental relationships in relation to this album specifically. Like there are, you know, in the way we sort, in the way we tell teenagers in high school to sort stories into methods of conflict, be it man versus self, man versus world, I think we need to look at Billy Woods next to different people. So in this first case, I want to talk about Billy Woods and Elucid, you know, the relationship that I think is most fundamental to him as a whole, but also like, it's not as much on this record, although he does get his obligatory multiple features per album, as has been the case for nearly every Billy Woods record for a while now, because like, hey, they're good friends, you know, like their relationship as a working duo is perhaps the thing that I think has really set both of them off on the right path. You know, like if you read the Backwoods Studios profile earlier this year from Pitchfork, they talk a lot about how Elucid's, you know, kind of existed just as an A&R guy for Billy Woods. Like he's been able to get them just incredible guest spots and new signees to their label. You know, just in this year alone, we've gotten albums from Fielded, Sketch 185, and Jeff Markey, Blockhead, and I'm probably forgetting someone else, so I'm just gonna check the label real quick because that's easy enough to do. It's just a real treat to see a label so explicitly focused on one set of sounds and really getting it, like having a range of artists that you can really understand and enjoy. Oh yeah, they also put out a Fatboy Sharif record this year, as well as Shrapnel's Metal Lung. It's just
there are a lot of like indie labels right now that are doing cool stuff, but the ones that tend to be succeeding are like, we kind of do a little bit of everything, and like the way that they've been cool is like the breadth of their taste, and it is refreshing to have a label that is more like, we have like an ethos and an ideology and like a very defined mission statement that is not necessarily like super restrictive in terms of what they do, but it's more like, we're advancing an agenda here. We're not just an everything goes tent.
Yeah, no, if you have heard a few of them, I feel like you can kind of enjoy all the rest, like a few, like, because that's the thing, like, it's like that, you know, that old, like, Bad Boy record standard where, you know, the guys who are, like, the big faces of the label, they'll show up on everybody's records.
You know what it's honestly kind of like, yeah. I've never thought about this, they're like the Funzer for rap, kind of, sort of, like, if you really stretch and squint. Like, it's like a,
I think it makes sense.
There's like a certain kind of niche fan within the larger subgenre that's looking for one specific thing, and then there's one person that has sort of stepped up to be like, we will provide a whole fuckload of that for like the for,
yeah, and even then with audience. even then there's subcategories within subcategories, you know, like the Fielded record and the Blockhead record and the Fatboy Sharif record do not sound anything alike but to each other completely, but they're still on the same level, same label, and they have like several of the same guys as guest spots, you know, like, yeah. it's just a sort of a beneficial environment for everybody who is involved in it, in a way that I think really has contributed the sense of holistic nature to all of their works. And it's like the same reason that I find that, you know, Arm & Hammer records can kind of exist in the same continuity as Billy Woods. It's like why I think about Elucid so critically next to Billy as a pairing, because like they, for better or worse, have made each other into something that I think is really unique within the landscape of music right now. It's just like these two as a pair seem to know each other well and really get down what they do well. And that is the first of three. The second is, of course, Billy Woods and Kenny Siegel. Kenny Siegel, he's, you know, a long-standing staple at this point with, you know, like, with like this specific corner of rap music. Like, I feel like he has kind of become a name over time just because, like, he has a tendency to pair up with guys that have, you know, interests from very specific audiences. Like, even just in the last few years, you know, he's done whole tapes with Serengeti and R.E.P. Ferreira and Himmler Ernst, a.k.a., Sam Harris. Yeah.
Sam Harris.
I don't listen to Future Islands, so I can never remember the guy's name, even though he's literally on this record. I should remember his name.
I was
going
to bring up, this is a very important point, and it's definitely important that I derail this conversation to bring this up. But Sam Herring is on this record, and I was just thinking when I was listening back to it before this part, like, it would be really crazy if that guy was on David Letterman and he sang about seasons changing. I think that would be really funny.
You're never going to believe this, but he was also on the R.E.P. Ferreira Kenny Siegel record, So the Flies Don't Come, that we all love to talk about. Like he seems to show up in a lot of these places.
He's a great guy to call if you need someone to sing in a beautiful baritone voice.
But that's the thing. That's the crazy thing, Jackie. That's the crazy thing. He doesn't really sing that much on So the Flies Don't Come. It's the talking dog at the Shell Shack is singing.
Oh, hell yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just, like, people love to be like, there was a period when people would just be like, guys, you wouldn't believe it, but Sam Herring from Future Islands, he can rap. And I'm just like, guys, get over yourself. We're not doing Paul Banks again, okay?
I knew you were going to bring it up, and if you weren't, I was going to. Thank you.
Oh my god. But yeah, just back to the main thing. Kenny Siegel, he's a forever staple of the LA beat scene guys. The like later period stuff that I feel like has kind of disassociated itself from that and just been like its own weird little corner of rap. Just Kenny Siegel in particular, like, yeah, he has a voice. We all know him. He's the guy who doesn't really quantize the stuff and has these like really particularly dusty sort of samples of like selection of samples to range from, and he really has a way of like matching with the person he's going for in that moment more than anything. And this record is a real, like, it's their second time around. Hiding Places is still pretty, I think it's seen as like one of the first like real big breakthroughs for Billy Woods after post History Will Absolve Me, you know, like after that was Dour Candy and Known Unknowns, which are his two blockhead records, which I feel like they're pretty decently loved, but at the same time, you know, they don't get like the big like dual header billing like they do for, you know, Billy Woods and Messiah Music on Church, and Billy Woods and More Mother on Brass, you know, like a lot of his records, which are full face collaborations, are typically just, you know, they say it on the tin. It's like, hey, Preservation made this one. But whereas those two, I feel like, are a little bit less heralded, even though, you know, Blockhead is like a venerable New York veteran himself, you know, like we have had many years to appreciate his contributions to record like to records like None Shall Pass. It's been done, you know? But for Kinney, it's a different thing where I feel like he's still a taste to be appreciated. And here he brings forward a just really nice palette of stuff. Like, I like the progression from the beginning of this record, which has kind of warmer sounds, you know, just like a fusion between the more kind of rackety stuff that comes in the middle and the like warmer sounds in the back half. I feel like that front loaded section up from like, I don't know, the first five songs or so is like very front loaded on just like, here's something kind of sonorous and upfront that you can get into very easily. And then immediately, like around track five or six, it just goes off the rails in a way that's kind of fun. Like the Babylon by Bus Year Zero back to back is one of the most creative things I've heard all year, specifically like that bit in Babylon by Bus where the guys from Shrapnel are about wrapping up their performance and then Billy comes in and there's just this huge orchestral sample that just like so gracefully kind of glides into the beat. I'm just like, that's the kind of clever little touch that you're just getting with Kinney that I think nobody else would bother to do. You know, they just be like, that first beat is enough, but the switch really adds to it. You know, just little detailed things like that. Like he has a way of making his stuff feel very alive and well read, just in a way that feels like, oh, this guy understands what this performer needs in a way. And finally, the third relationship of the three, Billy Woods versus himself. You know, we got to talk about the man. He is a machine. He just keeps finding ways to talk about things that I find very amusing and interesting. You know, like I've said it before, probably on air, but I could listen to Billy Woods talk about various dinners he's had for a whole hour, and that could be just the album. Like, legit, he just has a way of just like writing about food that just makes me go like, damn, that's really cool. It's much appreciated. It's much appreciated. You know, you get just beautiful lines every other time. Like describing an evening with his neighbors as I turned the music up incrementally and told mischievous lies. I whispered in the host's ear all night. Like things like that, where it's just like, why is this the way he's choosing to write about this? Like, or just, you know, weird asides that are so out of pocket and grim that you have to respect the man's craft. Like, of course, the one I think about a lot is like the early verse on Year Zero, where it's like, sooner or later, it's going to be two unrelated active shooters, same place, same time, great minds, Tesla and Edison. It's just, good God, man. Just he has a way of writing circles around everyone. You know, you can bring in a dozen guests on here and you get some of the best. You get, you know, Lucid, Serengeti, if you're listening to the deluxe version, Aesop Rock, Lucid, Danny Brown, Shrapnel, and Quelly Chris. And it's like he's just beating all of them out. He's just that good. And it's so frustrating to me to just see like to see this guy somehow again and again, like, surprise me and my expectations, where I think I have a handle on, you know, how good he is at this particular craft, and yet he continues to get better in a way that's just like, in a way that like not only I can recognize it, but like other people are starting to give it that recognition of like, yes, this is a perennial talent who we have to kind of admire for his respect for the craft. And it's like
it's like partly that this album is more accessible, but it's also the knock-on effect of a couple years in a row of like a Billy Woods record going under the radar, but then it doing well on critics' lists. So that this time around, when like I finally was like, okay, let me listen to this thing, I had tried to do it as homework several times before, and like that breaks the barrier down to the point that when this record came around, not only was it easier to get into, but it's also like, at this point, you don't have to sell people on Billy Woods as much, because it's just he stuck around enough and continued to get the accolades. And it's like people that care about this stuff have paid attention at this point.
Yeah, I mean, like it's another like 2 years in a row he's done double releases. Like that's how hardcore he's been about this, is just keeping a very steady grind of things to keep people remembering, like, oh yeah, Billy Woods is a guy we love, right? Like he's just say he's the best. Let's not argue. Yeah. It's a conversation that must be had again.
Have a period of time where someone is just like clearly in a good pocket, and they're just they're flooding the zone, not in a like constantly flowing singles, endless content, infinite content, Arcade Fire sort of thing, but like they are just like flooding the zone because it's like I got a hot hand right now and I gotta write as many good records as I have while I've got this juice, and we're getting a lot of squeeze out of the juice.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing about this is you know, like what critics would classically call an imperial phase. Like this is the moment when we are like, I cannot imagine him getting any bigger than this, but like, hey, he could. Like
that's kind of thing. So like one first thing, I guess a transparency notice, my job worked this album to radio because they signed the distro deal with Fat Possum. I'm not sure if it's just an overall distro deal or if it's just for this record.
Well, considering that the latest Arm & Hammer was like a sign, they were like actually signed that was proper Fat Possum. We buy diabetic test strips.
Yeah, so we get to work both those records this year to radio, which was awesome because it's like, oh wow, we're getting to work like the most critically acclaimed rap album of the year to college radio, and people are responding really, really well to it because, duh, it's a great record. But also, I mean, I mentioned this is a road album, and one of my favorite songs on this record is NYC Tap Water. As someone that just did like a good amount of traveling this past month, like just going to, you know, a different city and then going back, what that song does so well is that it's the little things about going back home that really, really matter. It isn't just like just even the tap water, just having that stability is really nice after, you know, a certain period of time of instability where just like I don't really know what my next drink of water is going to taste like, let alone like where I'm going to stay, who I'm going to see, like the venue, all this shit. It's just like this nice like leveling down after this sort of, you know, road trip record where you're kind of going through all the different things, like, hey, I'm just here. I get to enjoy the New York City tap water. I get to play with my cat and just chill the fuck out after this, you know, this long road trip. So again, this record's great.
I mean, and even then, like, even then it's still a line of contrast, you know, because the closer immediately after that, it's like, oh yeah, we give a lucid, like a very lengthy verse, and then Billy just comes in for like 8 bars and just hits you with this just stone cold, like, yeah, I'm watching my kid in the park. I wonder how long I've got to live. Like, it's just this moment of like full clarity where you're just like, this is how it must feel inside his head all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it kind of, going back to our conversations about some of the previous records, it has this nice like non-ending ending and flow to it where it's like, yeah, there's not a neat bow tie at this end. That's what life is. Life is just some stuff keeps happening, and Billy Woods keeps saying some wild shit that you have to go, damn, you really do be like that. You know, like,
The line in Year Zero, the two active shooters line, is like one of the best bits of like pitch black dark comedy that I've heard this year.
I mean, listen, the man dropped the line, Henry Kissinger, my album's only feature, and Henry Kissinger died like 2 months later. I'm just saying, we must honor the craft.
Billy Woods, who's a really bad guy that we want to do? Billy Woods, write a line about Joe Biden, write a line about Donald Trump, write a line about Rudy Giuliani.
He's done a lot of those already, about all three.
Okay, that is true. More bars. We need more bars. We need more Biden bars, more Trump bars, more Giuliani bars.
I'm pretty sure he made a corn pop is a bad dude joke on like the last Arm & Hammer.
Netanyahu, get some bars about him. Give us the Brett Gelman bar, all right? Give us some Brett Gelman bars, all right? I want to see that fucker drop dead.
You're like getting very close to threatening life. I got people. We're gonna reel that back real quick as the legal team of this podcast.
Alleged. Look, my lawyer Alan Dershowitz will protect me in court. Okay, he might be under some hot water right now, but he'll be there for me when it comes time.
Why did something happen to old Dersh? What's going on? I'm not following the news. I'm stealing.
I mean, again, he simply said that we should condemn Hamas, and people got mad at him. You know, he said something before that, but really the main point is we should be condemning Hamas. You know, at the end of the day, but. I mean, yeah, Billy Woods, again, one of our finest currently. And like, here's the thing. There's probably going to be a Billy Woods record that comes out like this year, 2024, and it's going to be great. And, you know, like I said, the hand is hot right now. And he's just a guy that he knows his lane really, really well. And it isn't to say that he doesn't have ambitions, because clearly like this record and like We Buy Diabetic Test Strips, like there are ambitions with these records, but it is at the same time, like, he knows what he's good at, and he's just like, this is what I'm going to do, and I'll make my little variations here and there. It's just, again, he's just a guy.
Respect the craft. That's
the craft.
We see a man in his moment, in the peak of his moment, and we must honor the man, as one would say.
Exactly. So yeah, MAPS, Billy Woods, our number one album of the year. So yeah, that'll do it for us. We're finally able to wrap 2023 up with a bow. Our album of the year list, I don't feel like repeating it. You listen to the episode. We'll post it. So you listen. You can do it yourself. Again, but now we can finally get into 2024 proper here on the Indie Heads podcast. We got a lot of great episodes coming up later on in the month. Of course, our next episode will be taking a little breather, at least on the main feed, as we are going to go back to the bonus feed for our next episode, YouTuber Music Volume 2. Of course, Volume 1 is up now on all the streams, because we unlocked that one. So, hey, if you want to hear more horrible, awful music by YouTubers, that episode is coming up very, very soon. And then later on in the month, we've got Garage Rock, Would You Revive Me, as we teased. Again, Gavin, he's got to do two things this month. Well, actually potentially three things, but hopefully it's two. He either needs to talk about Yola Tango on this very podcast, as hopefully he sent a transmission. If not, we got to get a weekend dance from him, I swear to God. And also we make him sincerely talk about Garage Rock Guys. So that episode should be a lot of fun. Very excited for that one. And then, of course, to end off the month, White Boy Heaters. Of course, we've done two or three episodes now on the White Girl Heaters. It's time for the White Boys to shine. All right. I got a good playlist cooked up for that one. But yeah, that is it. Hopefully you all enjoyed this, this album of the year pod. And yeah, again, cheers to the year. Looking forward to what 2024 has in store for us. So yeah. Hope you enjoyed this one. See you later. Bye-bye.
Ready to die, it's no biggie. No surprise, no pity. Lived a couple lives, go ahead and slide. Hope I take a couple with me. Made a couple dollars, it got tricky quickly. What you expect? Play stupid games, you fly an easy jet. Bratislava to Utrecht. Something fell off before I even left. So when I saw the missed calls, I knew it was next. Didn't have to open the text. Stupid prizes, couples therapy on Zoom. It's a train wreck. My evil eye ward off hex though. FaceTime declined, I'm trying to live in the moment like death row. The sun set in the desert, red glow, redness in the west. I sip Mexico's best slow. Mezcal Negroni, sitting atop the corral, smoking, watching unbroken wild ponies run wild at sundown. Only the lonely big tree like the sundial. Stopped in New Mexico, I ain't seen my folks. It's strange, I feel right at home on my own.
Three oboes, one clarinet. Black rainbows, the night wet, the room smell like Marrakesh. Dubstep drift in the window, I sit at the desk. It's a party outside, some have, some overdressed. They was going off during Playboy Cardi set. Now they in the halls partying, checking their phones. Bass shake the walls, I'm smoking alone in a cardigan, thinking of home. The cannabis single origin waffle cone. Went back down to the bar again, wig blown. After party packed like Parliament. Ass cheeks and cheekbones, lips slightly parted, butter wouldn't melt. I gave her margarine. I'm looking like the helper, someone who just wandered in. The vibe is animal pelts, chunky rings, clunky shoes, lots of ink. Dudes who order everybody's drink. Really, I'm just waiting for my phone to ping. I'm thinking about you when I'm supposed to be thinking about other things. I don't go to sleep, I tread water till I sink.
Continental breakfast, sticking weave, talking roll. I can't take you with me, but I'll be on your phone. You can take it off anytime you Texas feels like weeks on the road. Pissing Mississippi, stopped in New Mexico. I ain't seen my folks. It's strange how I feel.